We like to do things by the numbers. We're all about commerce and community. Welcome to The Upswing, presented by Oricon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now for the host that's always on The Upswing, Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, Milwaukee. The business of sports today on The Upswing, a serious VIP vibe right here in the studio in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. We have Mark Miles, the president and CEO of Penske Entertainment and IndyCar. We have Abe Madcor, the publisher of the Sports Business Journal. And as always, for our Business of Sports show, we have Mark Cass, Senior VP at Team Lammy. But as we do to open every show, two up on The Upswing. First, saw this yesterday, The Wall Street Journal. An Elon Musk loan to a friend has a Milwaukee connection. Gene Wilder. Remember Gene Wilder? He was born right here in Milwaukee, lived here for a while too. The home he bought in 1976 for $300,000. With some of the proceeds from Young Frankenstein, I think it's Frankenstein, is now in the news. Wall Street Journal had this exclusive yesterday. Musk loaned Jordan Walker Perlman, who's the nephew of Wilder, money to buy his uncle's home that actually he grew up in, loaned him $7 million. He still owes $6.7 million on it. Perlman and his wife, Elizabeth Hunter, can no longer make the payments to Musk. So Musk, according to the Wall Street Journal, is foreclosing. All is well, though, as Wilder's nephew says, this closing is, well, this is the closing of a very unicorn and beautiful chapter in our lives. I'm not disgruntled at all. The Bel Air home, for the record, is up for sale for $12.95 million. So I think everyone, including Elon, is going to be all right with this deal. Number two, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce on Monday opened up its nomination period for this year's contest to determine the coolest thing that the state of Wisconsin manufactures each and every year. Any product made in Wisconsin qualifies, and anyone can nominate a product before the September 6th deadline. You just go to madeinwis.com. According to a news release, the contest highlights not only cool products made in our state, but also the entrepreneurial and work behind each product, said Kurt Bauer of WMC. He's the president and CEO. Our manufacturers are the best in the country, and we have a great opportunity to underscore their contributions to our economy, the high-paying careers they create, and the innovative and necessary products they make. Last year, by the way, Fox City's Appleton-based Plexus Corp, their Bevy bottleless water dispenser, won. I'm not sure if that's like the coolest product I've ever seen, but it's pretty innovative in terms of how it works with flavorings and kind of replaces, you know, the need for the plastic water bottles in office spaces. Take a look at it. You know, the best thing is, though, manufacturing in our state contributes $71 billion to the state's economy and employs almost 500,000 people. No matter how you cut it, you know what else is really cool? IndyCar. And that's next. You're listening to WTMJ, and this is The Upswing. Welcome back to The Upswing. We are presented by Horicon Bank. As always, on Wednesdays, it is the business of sports. We have a full panel today. Like, there's just, it's a wonderful energy here in the studio. Mark Miles, president and CEO of Penske Entertainment and IndyCar, joins us. IndyCar Series returns to compete at the historic and beautiful Milwaukee Mile at Wisconsin State Fair Park Labor Day weekend, right around the corner. Today, Mark's in town to be a part of a Milwaukee Business Journal and Sports Business Journal panel discussion on sports. There'll be representatives from the Brewers, the Bucks, Green Bay Packers, Milwaukee Admirals. Thankful he's stopping in to talk to us today. This panel, by the way, will be moderated by our other guest, Abe Madcor. So, Abe, thanks for being here as well. So, Mark, talk about the strategic factors that led to the decision to bring IndyCar back to the Milwaukee Mile. As a lifelong passionate Milwaukeean, I went to the Mile with my dad growing up. Haven't been here since 2015. So talk about that process and getting IndyCar back to the Mile.
Yeah, well, thanks. Thanks for having us on the air. It's great to be in Milwaukee today and last night. Had a fun dinner to set everything up. Strategic, that's not all strategy. Part of it is we really care about the history. And this place is the oldest active racetrack in the country. And I think the first IndyCar racing, or kind of our lineage, was 1939. We've had like 114 races here. So that history, as people who come involved with the Indy 500, which is a historic event in its own right, matters to us. Strategically, the Midwest matters. We've got a lot of fans here. A lot of fans travel to our other IndyCar races around the Midwest, from here, from Chicago, from the area. We've got a great event up at Road America in Kohler. And we felt like that's a market opportunity. We got to try again.
Yeah.
We got to come back in and make a big dent.
And obviously, Iowa is a short drive, too. And Iowa is a key market for the series as well. I mean, in integrating the sponsorship with Hy-Vee, with Iowa and Milwaukee, how important is that to have Hy-Vee on board with all, 285 locations around eight states? How is Hy-Vee helping you kind of power and promote the event, not only here, but in Iowa?
Well, the whole organization reminds me of Roger Penske. They're fabulous at executing. So they didn't get much of a head start here. I think that will grow. But what they do in Iowa is amazing in terms of you go into any of their hundreds of stores in Iowa, mm-hmm. and you feel like you walked into the paddock or the pits. It's just absolutely decked out in everything IndyCar. They've got lots of employees, tons of customers. They bring their suppliers, you know, who are competing for shelf space, and in every way they can, they leverage their leadership in the event, and it's become amazing. It's a real asset for the state of Iowa.
Yeah, I mean, being able to integrate the suppliers and the products into what you're doing with the fan fests and other things is really important to not only leverage their sponsorship and take it to the next level, but to drive engagement for fans.
Exactly. It's an extension of our objective of having more consumer brands involved. They don't have to write the check and be a sponsor of IndyCar per se. They can do it through their big customer, their big the big daddy.
All right.
Grocery business.
So what does media and TV look like for this race? Is it still live streaming on Peacock and coverage on USA? And how do you kind of, I don't know, how do you align this year's media strategy with what's coming next with your new deal with Fox?
Yeah, well, there'll be a pretty significant departure, to be frank.
Yeah.
We are where we are this year. It's been our priority for years has been reach or audience. And NBC's been a great partner, along with other platforms that are part of NBCU, like you said,
Peacock, USA.
Peacock and USA.
Yeah.
This was the Olympic year, which made our scheduling more difficult. But next year, we've done a deal. It's been announced where every one of our 17 races will be live on Fox.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody can get it. Everybody knows where to go. There can be continuity in promoting from event to event to event. We've spent a lot of time with them already, even though our arrangement doesn't really start until the beginning of next calendar year. Their celebrities, their personalities in other sports and news and the like will all be brought to bear. I think they're very committed and excited about being part of IndyCar, and I think they're kind of nimble and agile. Mm-hmm. So we're looking for great things.
Very good. Mark Miles, President and CEO of Penske Entertainment and IndyCar, joins us. When we come back, how important are sports documentaries and series like The Lionheart on HBO, which I'm a big fan of? I want to talk to Mark about the importance and the evolution of the media space as it relates to IndyCar. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Today, the business of sports, a VIP action-packed roundtable discussion here. Honored to be joined by Mark Miles, the CEO and president of IndyCar and Penske Entertainment. So, Mark, I'm a big fan of kind of humanizing athletes through reality series. And obviously, IndyCar has the 100 Days to Indy series with the CW and on Netflix now. But how important are those that type of programming to what you want to do with the sport as a whole.
It's huge, right? Yeah. I mean, you, in a way, you can't do enough.
Yeah.
It is a way for people who aren't necessarily interested or don't think they're interested in the sport to capture their attention, to see the athletes who, in our case, you know, are laying down in a car with with all the equipment on, you can't see them. So to get to know them is great. And I think this the studio that's put it out has done a great job in telling those stories. Our drivers are happy to be part of it. So there's it's really relatively easy to give the access to get the stories told. And it's not very hard. It's hard to tell them well. It's not hard to find them.
Yeah.
There's plenty of personalities, families, and I think it's endless.
Yeah, and I think as with anything, if you're able to humanize the athletes behind the sport, you're going to get more people into the sport, and then ultimately you're going to be able to draw more sponsorship and more engagement. And you know, as we were saying over the break, my 16-year-old doesn't watch the races, but he'll watch the F1 series. He'll watch the drive to IndyCar to experience and connect with the athletes he's seeing on social in a different way. And then he's like, whoa, we got to watch the race. So it all kind of works together.
It's a little bit like our snake pit in Indianapolis. We have an EDM festival during the race. The kids can't see the track. There's 25,000 kids in this EDM festival.
Wow.
Going nuts. What happens is eventually they get to the stage in life where maybe that's not for them, and they buy tickets, uh-huh. and they come back. So
you know, Jeff, he's talking about you and I there.
That's right.
We're not doing the EDM still... thing.
I'll see you in the snake pit.
I think Mark's asking us to go there next year, Jeff.
Hey,
what do you think?
Hey, I'm on board. Let's do it. Well, obviously, those type of things, like the free fan zone and the live concerts, how important is that extension of the entertainment experience to what you're doing on the track?
Yeah, well, like probably any commissioner you'd have in here, I think it starts with the sport and what happens on the pitch or the track. It's got to be great, compelling competition, and we happen to believe that our racing is the best.
Yeah.
Beyond that, then, that's not enough. It's not enough in any sport. All the other things you can do and the way you market to, the values you bring to fans and prospective fans, the experience when they do come, it all is hugely important. And it's not like you pick one over another. You've got to hit them all out of the park. Yeah.
How has that changed over the years? It seems like it's way more important right now.
You know, years ago, when I was a kid in Indianapolis, there was a snake pit, but my wife called it organic. There's nothing organic about the old snake pit. Right? But it wasn't organized.
Okay.
Fans just kind of created this vibe and this thing. Now, you want to make sure it happens, and you want to make sure that it's in front of and your fans are well aware of the opportunities. So, yeah, and we want to have something for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it has to be very deliberate and intentional, and that's probably the big difference to me.
Yeah. From your work in Indy Sports Corporation and your base in Indianapolis, how would you compare and contrast Milwaukee and Indianapolis? I mean, I was like, Indy's done a great job of leveraging its assets, youth sports, and really made itself a destination around sports.
100%.
Milwaukee's getting there in many ways, but how would you compare and contrast the two markets?
First of all, I'd say sort of just the way I feel about it is Milwaukee's a really cool city that's got great trajectory. The downtown's cool. To me, that's always the nexus. The downtown of a great city has to be great and attractive and vibrant. So I think that's a great current place for Milwaukee to be. Listen, Indianapolis is sort of seen, we had a conversation last night, as this overnight sensation in sports that started in 1979. And we have been at it as a principal city development, economic development strategy in that community since the late 70s and never let off the throttle.
Hmm.
So lots of things have happened that it was very entrepreneurial. Nobody really knew what it would be when we started. When I graduated from high school, there wasn't a single sports venue in downtown Indianapolis. And the convention center was a small fraction of itself, and there were three hotels that you could go in without getting your parents mad at you. So it was a very different place, but in one adult lifetime, it's been built into a whole different place. And sports has the great benefit of doing two things. If you're having big events, it's bringing other people's money into your economy. It's not just recirculating your own wealth. it also is great for marketing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't write the check, you put it on the air. And those two things have been enormously sustainable and hugely important to our city.
I mean, is that going to happen here, you think, in Milwaukee over time? You're seeing, obviously, what you've seen so far. Do you think we're headed that way?
I think you have every opportunity to do it. It requires a civic and business and political consensus.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I would say this. In Indianapolis, mayor after mayor after mayor supported the strategy and always helped, but it was never any one mayor's. In my book, if it comes from the political process, there'll be an election someday and they'll shift gears and do something else.
Yeah.
So I like the fact that this was born from the kind of business and civic community and therefore has been sustainable over all these years. So if you get it right, I see no reason. It's a great city. It's beautiful.
And ultimately, you have to have that collaborative civic approach to make the investments in infrastructure to get the events here. And, you know, that's truly important. I want to know some of the lessons you learned in terms of your time working with tennis stars at the ATP. Like, how does the tennis game and the IndyCar game, how do those two mirror?
Look, I spent 15 fabulous years in men's tennis all over the world, and I wouldn't trade that for anything. Maybe I wouldn't trade the first 12 years. 15 might have been a little long. But, and it, you know, that was a sport I played and that was more natural for me. And I've got enormous respect for the degree of difficulty of the tennis player. I mean, imagine being the best in the world, and it's not subjective. You got to earn it every single time you go on. So they're unbelievably competitive, and they've only gotten better.
And in a niche sport that you really had to amplify the athletes because not everyone played tennis.
No, but it was a sport that it may have been a micron deep, but it was a globe wide. Almost every country has some tennis. So, and if their athlete happens to be top fill in the blank 20, then he's a big deal in that country, mm-hmm. even if we never heard of him in the States. Contrasting that to driving, it's been remarkable. The tennis players have a lot of influences that cause them to kind of be insular and not always jumping into opportunities to help grow the sport.
Yeah.
Drivers in IndyCar are absolutely the opposite.
All right. Mark Martin, IndyCar, Labor Day weekend at the mile. WTMJ News Time is 10:30. ABC News is next.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Divers searching the wreck of that sunken yacht off the coast of Sicily have recovered at least four bodies today. Two people who were on board are still missing after the ship went down in a storm early Monday. 15 were able to escape. They are still trying to determine exactly why that boat sank so quickly. Democratic National Convention's second night featured a double dose of the Obamas. Tonight, Bill Clinton and Tim Walz will speak. Donald Trump was in Michigan. ABC's Rachel Scott has more on that.
We saw the former president talk about the economy. And turning to crime today, he'll be out in North Carolina with his running mate, Senator J.D. Vance, focused on national security. Polls show that he does have an advantage on Kamala Harris on most of those issues, but she is performing better than President Biden did.
A new study of common baby food sampled from U.S. grocery stores finds roughly two-thirds don't meet the standards for healthy baby food that has been set by the World Health Organization. I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
Citing Unlimited, WTMJ News Time, 10:31. Kamala Harris spent the second night of the DNC rallying voters in Milwaukee. Harris spoke to a packed house of over 15,000 supporters last night at Fiserv Forum, was joined by her running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. Her speech was streamed live to the DNC in Chicago, was interrupted several times by the crowd chanting, "We're not going back." A bicyclist has died after being hit by a train. Happened yesterday afternoon at the railroad crossing at South Silver Lake Street in downtown Oconomowoc. The Amtrak Borealis passenger train headed to St. Paul was delayed for about 3 hours. Nobody on the train hurt. Authorities still investigating what led to the crash, but all railroad crossings in the area are reopened. Bus rapid transit coming to Madison. Larger all-electric buses and dedicated bus-only lanes will run the rapid route starting in September. That route will run from Easttown Mall to Junction Road on the far west side, with buses running approximately every 15 minutes most of the day. Planning for a second BRT route running north to south is underway, hoping to launch in 2028. Time for some news about your money. The WTMJ Annex Wealth Management Market Update. Dow down just 4 points at 40,830. The NASDAQ is up 44 at 17,860. And the S&P 500 is up 12 points at 5,609. Get an honest opinion of where you are financially and where you're headed. Work with the fee-only fiduciary. Start at annexwealth.com. Take a look at the roads now with your WTMJ Johnson & Sons paving time saver traffic. I-94 West at I-43, 94 North. The left two lanes were blocked due to a crash that has been cleared off the road, but there might be some residual slowing in that area right now. Here's your WTMJ five-day forecast. Sunny and nice today with high 73 lakeside, 76 inland. Clear tonight, lows 50 inland, 55 lakeside. Sunny, still nice tomorrow, high 77. Getting a little warmer Friday as we head into the weekend. Friday's high 80, a little more humid, maybe some rain Saturday afternoon, high of 83. Then Sunday, partly cloudy, warm and humid with a high of 86. Right now, Madison, 65, 67 in Green Bay and 68 in Milwaukee. I'm Connie Weber, Siding Unlimited, WTMJ. MJ News Time, 1033.
You know Fleet Farm's got everything for everyday life. But did you also know we have the best prices guaranteed every day? Pet food, wild bird food, automotive, hunting, fishing, farming, you name it. All your everyday essentials, all at the best prices guaranteed. And if you happen to find a lower price elsewhere, we'll match it. Any day, every day. Fleet Farm's got everything you need for everyday life at the best prices guaranteed.
As the kiddos get ready to get back to school, you can find really great back-to-school savings at St. Vincent de Paul thrift stores. School supplies and some surprisingly cool clothing, too. And teachers, you get an additional discount. Get the best back-to-school bargains at St. Vincent de Paul thrift stores on Highway 100 in Layton and Greenfield, 23rd in Lincoln, and 76th and Bradley Road in Milwaukee.
Ooh, you're gonna love it, St. Vincent de Paul.
Get the beat of the Bucks straight from a fan favorite and Bucks legend.
Welcome to the Fantastic Void. Marcus Johnson, the captain of this vessel.
Tap into Hear District with Marcus Johnson, a Bucks Plus audio production.
My first mate, Chris Johnson, the only father and son tandem.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks and conversations with the biggest names in basketball. This week on the pod, Marcus and Chris are talking all things schedule. Find Hear District now on Bucks.com/plus, the Bucks app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Need to hire quality candidates fast? You need Indeed. Our video interview tool makes it easy and effortless to meet with candidates. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, honored today to be joined by Mark Miles, President and CEO at Penske Entertainment. As always, our captain, Mark Cass from Team Landy, and Abe Madcore, publisher of the Sports Business Journal. Abe, welcome to Milwaukee.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. So from your kind of, let's look the umbrella sports media lens that you cover each and every day. You know, particularly in terms of digital transformation, kind of media fragmentation. We talked a little bit about this with Mark. Where do you envision, this is a big question, but where do you envision the future of sports media going?
So, Jeff, it's the biggest challenge and question facing sports teams and sports leagues and anybody in the sports business right now because of the media fragmentation, the decline of the pay TV universe, and more direct-to-consumer options. So the options when you go direct to consumer, Jeff, are not as lucrative, but you, what Mark was talking about earlier about going for reach and distribution and trying to get in front of more people. It's the conundrum that leagues like Mark and every league is dealing with and teams that are dealing with because it is their largest revenue driver outside of ticket sales for many of these organizations.
And it's not necessarily an either or.
No.
I mean, it's a either. And probably
for
right
now, for now.
For now.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think that continues the way that, hey, I'm going to be a season ticket holder. I'm going to invest in streaming services and then I'm going to be able to maybe for $9.99 watch a single race via this provider, even though I'm not a regular subscriber.
I think you touched on a lot of things, Jeff, and I'd be interested in the other two's point of view, but personalization, segmentation, direct to what your interests are, a la carte, all those things are very, very much in the mix. But we're not there yet. As we sit here in 2024, it's got to play out a little bit longer because still ESPN and some other networks are north of 70 million households, and that's still the big driver.
You know, think about, Abe, though, kind of what happened here. We talked about this morning with our NBA team, the Bucks. Kind of last year had a group of games that was on free kind of TV. Very rare to happen, but yet happen to Milwaukee? I mean, is that going to happen elsewhere where you get it over free over-the-air TV?
We're seeing that in Utah. We're seeing that in Phoenix. We're seeing that in markets where the regional sports network model has really broken down. And so, yes, I think they're seeing the free over-the-air option as a compelling one,
right?
Because what does it address? It addresses reach. You're getting more viewers to watch your product.
But yet we're in a small market. Isn't the revenue so important to these teams? Is that kind of a...
The revenue's not clearly the same.
Right.
And so that's the difficult decision. Owners and their leaders have to try to figure out if they're going to forsake some revenue for more eyeballs and try to sell against that with hopefully fans of the future or more advertising.
And we talked with Mark a little bit about this earlier in terms of investing in infrastructure, entertainment, and media. What are you seeing kind of nationwide, especially as the Brewers have $500 million to invest to improve American Family Field? What are you seeing with entertainment districts around the country? Are they integrating media and platforms?
Absolutely. It's now not a nice to have. Every organization, an ownership group is a need to have. So around every major sports facility going forward, I think you're going to see larger mixed use planning and entertainment and fan districts, all about aggregating people into a community. And then they can sell against that, Jeff, to your point, media, sponsorship, and other elements.
I mean, it's interesting here, Jeff, because think about how quickly it's happened in Milwaukee. I mean, we were just talking, what, about 6 months ago about whether or not the Brewers are going to get the money?
Right.
And now all of a sudden we're talking about year-round uses out there surveying fans. So the Brewers, I think, realized that right away how important it is. And they've also seen the success in Green Bay.
Yeah.
They've seen the success right downtown in Milwaukee. It works, and the Brewers are smart and are going to figure that out.
Yeah. Mark, have you seen... are there things that don't work in these entertainment district type fan experiences?
Well, it's hard to miss for us. It's a tough
situation for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, where we have 500,000 people in the month of May, and about twice that for the whole year. But we don't have all these games, so we don't really have the foot traffic. We have some land, and we will for sure be developing in the future. But it's got to be at the right time for the geography around it, the marketing around it. I don't know about missing. I mean, if we went too soon, maybe it'd be economically a struggle. But when you have a franchise that brings people in, especially in my view, when they're in the middle of an urban setting, it's almost like shooting fish in a barrel.
Yeah, I think,
and it's unique. Remember what happened here in 21, Jeff? How great it was when the NBA Finals was here and the world was looking at Milwaukee. Where were they looking at? They were looking at downtown Milwaukee, and the hundreds of thousands of people were there. So it works. It's just a matter of kind of how do you make it work. And I think you're going to see that with the coming here over the next couple years, the Bucks adding the music venue, adding retail and housing, and kind of talking already about other things.
Yeah, I think that's the fun civic challenge, is how do you incent the fan to come on non-game days to engage with the venues and the entertainment districts.
Think about pre-2018, the area near the arena right now, what that was like in June and July. You and I would be the only ones there, right? We'd be standing there talking to each other. Nowadays, it's very active. You see people there on a Wednesday night, on a Friday night. Everyone's there because it helps the downtown.
All right, the business of sports. You're listening to The Upswing, and this is WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing, the business of sports. Mark Miles joins us from IndyCar, Abe Madcore, publisher of the Sports Business Journal, and Mark Cass, as always, from Team Lammy. So just a general question for all of you, and you know, Mark, you may have some interesting, wonderful bias here, but in terms of the leagues you're covering each and every day, which league you really feel, media-wise, is innovating the quickest from the fan lens?
Well, in the sports business community, I think everybody, Jeff, still looks at the NFL because it's so strong and so powerful and has such reach and viewership. And they've done something different. They're generally the slowest, not slowest in a bad way, but they're generally the last one into some of the tests. But like, they have a number of different partners. They have Amazon now. They'll have Christmas games on Netflix now, in addition to Fox, CBS, and NBC. So they're they're dipping their toe into more areas. It's hard to say who's being more innovative because it's almost like forced by necessity. The marketplace is changing so drastically.
Yeah.
That's at least my point.
I mean, I'd say the NFL is just, it's always been the leader and the one I look to in terms of what they do and kind of creative. But it's also the NBA's kind of have some really traditional areas. I mean, that Christmas thing they do works very well for them. They get a lot of viewership of that. They've tried some other things. But, you know, I mean, I'll go back to the NFL. It's always kind of the monster in the room.
Yeah. And they both innovated around international audiences, too.
We're going to see that
NBA
in a couple weeks.
NBA was early on that. Yeah. NFL has followed, for sure.
I mean, see that in a couple weeks when Green Bay's down in Brazil. Yeah. I mean, that's a big deal.
Mark, what do you learn from the NFL as you take a look at what they're doing?
I learned I'd like to have a couple $1 billion more.
You'd like some of that revenue.
It's all about the money.
No, they do a phenomenal job. I think brilliant job, and they don't make false steps very often. They don't have to be the first to market. They've got to dominate a market when they come in. They're always thinking about the fan. They want the fan to know where to find them in every way, not just live coverage. I think you asked about the sport, but I think Apple gets a tip of the hat as an innovator. We'll see how it works out with soccer. So far, maybe not so good.
Yeah.
But I think they are definitely innovative thinking as they think about how to get into sports. It'll be very interesting to watch.
They were able to leverage a single athlete to get new subscriptions to draw people into a league that's still somewhat niche. And I mean, it worked for me. I subscribed. I watched, but I'm not right now. But when you have that star power with a single athlete, you got to dive into it. And I think they've innovated around broadcast for MLB, too, like the different camera angles and the different lenses there. If you're a subscriber to Apple TV Plus, you're going to get a different viewpoint of a ball game.
Mm-hmm. I do think, to Mark's point, Apple is a fascinating case study with what they did with MLS in terms of starting something from scratch, and it's such a global property. When I talk to the people at MLS, what they love about that is you can be a soccer fan anywhere around the world and just use your Apple app and watch any of these athletes, and that's unique. That's a unique proposition. Now, to your point, the jury's still out on how that deal will unfold.
Have you seen it with other sports, though, Abe, like MLB? Every once in a while, we'll have like the Brewers will be on only on like Apple or be on the Yahoo. It's something that only can watch if you have a subscription, which makes it a little different for people.
And that infuriates fans.
That bits people on Twitter and on other things mad. So, I mean, is that a smart move by those teams?
Again, it's back to leagues are experimenting in as many ways they can. So they're putting some games on different platforms to see what sticks. Hate to sound rude, but they'll take the money where they can take the money, and they'll try to see where their audience finds it.
All right. Three big, bright minds in sports business join us when we come back. If money wasn't a concern, the one sporting event each year they go to and why.
This is
the business of sports. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined today by a panel of sports business experts. Abe, I want to ask you, in terms of your coverage at Sports Business Daily, sports business, at each and every day, you're looking at all the leagues, but what do you see as the next breakthrough sport?
Oh, that's a loaded question.
Yeah,
Come on. You mean, Mark thinks it's going to be pickleball?
I've been coaching him for the last 24 hours, Jeff. It's pickleball.
I know.
Everybody's
always give Mark a chance to talk
for the last 30 years, right?
Yeah.
People still talk about, with all due respect, that soccer still needs to break through. I believe it has. But I do think that there's a lot of interesting leagues out there. I wouldn't overlook the growth of women's sports, Jeff. And for your listeners out there, we're seeing great energy, traction, and investment in women's sports. So whether it's women's soccer, whether it's the W, and you're seeing another basketball league start in 25, I do think that there's some real interest there.
Yeah, and I think, obviously, women's volleyball, strong too. Yeah. WTMJ locally here will carry UW-Madison women's volleyball. So that sport, I think, has a lot of opportunity, especially on the collegiate level.
Totally agree. And we're seeing also gymnastics and one of the fastest growing sports, flag football. And I think you're going to see more and more of that.
Yeah, pickleball, though. Let's go back to that, Abe. Come on, you left that one go without, offering
it. I don't think it's a great television product.
I think it's
a great participatory sport.
Okay, there you go. He threw me a bone there.
All right, Abe, what's the Sports Business Journal take? Will Major League Baseball stars be in the next Olympics in L.A.?
I do not think they will be. I think there are too many complications for them to overcome in terms of stopping the season. the make goods back to the teams, because if their season is shorter in terms of what's the insurance on the players, how many players will play. I think it's a very appealing option, Jeff, to be LA 28, the biggest games ever and the sport in America that it's known for, baseball. But I do think there are too many complications for that to happen.
Just logistically, just not going to work.
My point of view.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we teased it before the break. If money wasn't concerned, you've all been to a number of amazing sporting events. But we're looking at it from kind of the typical fan consumer lens here. If you go to one sporting event per year, what is it and why? And talk us through what that experience meant to you when you were there.
I'll start this, and I'll go with the U.S. Open. I mean, it to me was an amazing experience. If you love it, I mean, if you love that sport, the ability to what makes it cool is that you get there on the metro, you walk off, it's right there, you walk in, and there's tennis everywhere, and you can watch the greatest players in the world on a court as if I'm at the park. I mean, you're literally that close to them, and you can see all these players. So to me, it is, other than a Super Bowl, and I've been lucky enough to be at 3 Super Bowls, it is the greatest event I've ever been to. I've gone twice. I would go again in a minute.
And can you buy single match tickets for the US
Open?
Well,
single session tickets.
Session.
Not match. So, but that's like $4 or $5.
Give us a range of what that ticket costs.
You know, I think 55-ish to 60 to 80 to 90 to $100, depending on when.
Okay.
Depending on when. But again, I went one day. And I started watching them at 11, and I stopped watching them at 1:20 a.m.
Okay.
It was crazy, but it was the greatest day, and it was my daughter, and I still talk about that day. Tennis is kind of the
old. All right.
Pickleball.
Okay. Abe?
Real quick, I've not been to Lambeau. So Lambeau to
me. No, no, they're changing that.
We're
going to
change that.
I'm changing that.
With present company here, I have never been to the Indy 500, so I've never spent Memorial Day in that great city. So those would be two.
All right. Mark Miles?
I'm sorry this is so obvious, but I want you to come to the Indy 500.
Yes.
It is unique. There are 350,000 people there for that one event. The hour and a half, 2 hours before it is the best show for Americana. It's not about racing. It's the country. And I mean, imagine that they play Taps every year and the place, you can hear a pin drop with that many people there. It's just, I get goosebumps thinking about it.
All right, very good. IndyCar returns to the historic Milwaukee Mile Labor Day weekend. Mark Miles, Abe McCrower, Mark Cass, I appreciate your time, the business of sports here on the Upswing.